From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it. Welcome to The Treatment. Again, the home edition. I'm Elvis Mitchell, your host. What to say about my guest? Well, probably one of the best ways to describe her work is to quote the subject of her short, Wild Wild West, and his beautiful rant, Mark Bradford. At one point he says, taking humble stuff and demanding it have access. And I think that pretty much describes her style as a director. You may know her work from series such as, well, A Black Lady Sketch Show, in which she shattered another glass ceiling. My guest is director Dime Davis, who directed all the episodes of the show and has done many other shows too. First of all, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much. That was literally the best intro I've ever had in my life.
Again, we got to get you some more intros. We really have to do something about this. But I was just thinking, in that short, the way Mark is talking, and what's so interesting to me about you as a director is you find a way to take the style of the material and blend it into what you're doing. He's kind of a collage just on the grand scale. And the visual style, both the editing and compositionally, you basically use collage as your kind of your métier in that, don't you?
Definitely. I was so inspired, as I try to be by any subject, right? But I was so inspired by Mark and his work specifically. And I didn't know how else to really approach that. I let his work and the way he works with his hands and the outcome of that really kind of like inspire what the piece became. And I love that quote that you pulled because, man, it just touched me so much because I really kind of think of myself as an artist in that way. So yeah, I think to this day, that's one of my favorite projects that I got to work on.
Well, that quote really is so powerful. And I'm so glad you chose that because you look at your work and I don't want to say chameleon-like because that makes it seem like you blend in without bringing any of your own touches to it. But there's certainly a way you use negative space I think is distinctive to you. But if we talk about, and we should talk about A Black Lady Sketch Show, I mean, I was thinking about the masterclass from the first episode where not only is it framed like masterclass, but we can't help but look at all this stuff behind her that's in soft focus. There's too much going on behind her in the frame. In the same way, there's too much going on the way that she talks. And that struck me as being so representative of the way you approach directing.
There's so much chaos kind of in her, right? And she's trying to deliver it in a way where it doesn't seem chaotic at all. And it's really beautiful, right? There's so much in there. I think us as people, we have so much in us that we want to express, right? So I thought it was important to show that in a way that is not so on the nose, but where you just get a sense of it, you know, just like a tinge. That I love that you picked that out. That's so, it's really beautiful. I love filmmaking, so it's like, I love a frame, you know?
Here's something I'll say about you that I find really interesting. It's so often when we see people doing comedy, it's a kind of an indicating of the directing. It's overlighted because everything needs to be seen in the frame, or it's so much attempting to, you know, really kind of mimic other styles that there's kind of nothing in it. And what you do is, again, and I was really struck by that masterclass just because of the framing and the fact that rather than draw attention to all the stuff that's in her place, and we should say this is a parody of the masterclass and then the ads for them. In fact, just to digress, so this whole conversation is going to be a digression. I cannot watch an HBO promo, one of those ominous promos, and not laugh because you do them so beautifully.
Especially
all the ones that with black people in them. See them. I can't help but think about what you do. To get back to talking about that frame, though, I was just really struck by that. And again, you could really overemphasize it by having in sharp focus everything that's going on, but you put it in the front of the frame so we can sort of see how she's working and working a little bit too hard just in terms of her own representation. And the blonde dreads, there's a little bit too much going on just with her. So you don't have to over indicate that, do you?
Yeah, you don't. And I think this was one where, you know, we don't have many sketches where there's just a person in a room talking to a camera. And also, I'll be honest, like that is one of Robin's favorite characters, right? And I mean, I think we see why her performance is really stellar. But that's one where you don't want to do too much, right? You really want to let the performance sing. And I think that had we tried to do too much movement or use the camera for comedy, which we do in other places, I thought in this specific sketch, it would take away instead of just letting the performance in the frame kind of sing.
It does. And I think what's really fascinating about the show, too, is because the title of the show is so on the nose to not do that. And also by making the title so on the nose, as Robin does, and we're talking about the creator of the show, to sort of say that you can step back from that because there's that sets up an expectation of lack of nuance.
Yes. I don't think you necessarily know what you expect when you tune into this, which was important, I thought, for myself. You know, I don't come from a sketch background, right? These are women who came up through Second City and Groundlings and really kind of were working those muscles very early. And so for me, it was about approaching it like a storyteller, approaching it like a filmmaker, but also making sure that I could support the funny and support the storytelling. And just when I was doing research and trying to kind of find cram a little bit, right? Because I was a little intimidated by stepping into sketch, but I just was looking at filmmaking, specifically in comedy, and I was like, man, I don't know. In the recent years, I feel like there hasn't been a lot of visual storytelling in comedy. And sketch is, I think, known for kind of like improv, right? And you put a camera in a room and you let the actor go. And I thought for us, we really wanted to like step it up a little bit, right? And this is just going back to what you're saying as far as like what you expect in all aspects, really try to approach it at the highest of our abilities as filmmakers and as storytellers. And I think when you step into that, you are kind of blown away because it goes in so many directions that you don't expect. And we really never go to where you do expect.
It's a treat. We're talking about the show with the most obvious title outside of an infomercial, a Black Lady Sketch Show. All the episodes are directed by Diamond Davis. But in fact, again, because the title is so leading, there is so much fun that's had and just sort of laying out in visual and performance terms, nuance. And you said you think yourself as being a comedy person, but I think about what you've done on Boomerang. And one of the things that you do is really you find a way for us to visually identify that person or to be able to identify who that person is just by in terms of visual cues, by the way they're framed, by how close you put the camera. It lends a kind of reality to comedy that's not, again, over-indicating what we're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think we each sketch is very much like a short film, you know, and I think you have to have an entry point to that sketch to really step into that world. And I wanted to do that in two ways. Obviously, the actual world, I thought it was my job to make sure when we step into a world, we know exactly where we are. We know what the cues are so that the comedy can kind of come from that as well. And then we need an entry point, I think, with the character, right? And who it's about. And, you know, I approach that just in the same way that I would approach any piece of material where it's like, who are we, whose story is it? And why is it important for us to kind of attach to them and latch on so we can experience it from there?
The very first sketch really sort of like gives us an indication of what we're going to see going from one thing to another in the fog. That's really a kind of all-encompassing piece because it starts off as a horror parody and then becomes a beauty care commercial and turns back into being a horror parody, sort of. But I think what you clearly respond to and what they're doing in the show is a way to sort of make comedy, black comedy, about ideas as much as punchlines.
Totally, totally. I think so. And really make it about the story too, right? And we see so many different scenarios and so many different characters. It's like, it's crazy. And there are no two characters that feel the same or no two sketches that feel the same. We really try to approach everything, like I said, as a short film. And the fog, when I that was one of the ones when I read it, I was like, what the heck? Like, it was so... I mean, it's kind of mind-bending and it's cool, but it also has these references to blackness that we know and love, but I've never seen it captured in this way before. And shooting that was really fun too, because even in that, it's like, you know, I've seen these like horror kind of like foggy atmospheres before, but I was like, well, what if we set it in the day, right? Like there's something about that that's almost even eerier, right? So even within those, like you said, parodies, because they kind of are in a sense, but even in that, we're given those visual cues that you're used to, but you also want to just turn it on its head a little bit to give you a little bit extra, because I think that's what that whole, especially that one, that whole piece is like, wait, you're talking about ash? Like, you're talking about someone's skin? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's so surreal. But I think that we try to use all those visual cues to kind of help the audience along, but also give them a laugh, you know?
Yeah, but there, I guess what I like about the show, too, is that they're also runners. I mean, the last two episodes have pieces that are about, that start off being about, you know, a church luncheon and end up being an invitation into a threesome, which we get to see play out in the subsequent episode. And again, there's so many different visual storytelling styles in that. I mean, you start off as being really brightly lit. It's the kind of room where you almost use the camera to say, walk us into it and say, there's too much light in here. And then you kind of slowly solve that problem visually to the second part of it, which takes place in the bedroom. I mean, the fun for you, again, had to be, you're talking about storytelling, but I do think what's fun for us as viewers is there's so many visual ideas represented in this that lend, I think, real directorial sophistication to the show.
Wow, yeah, thank you. I mean, a lot of, you know, there was a lot on the page, you know, but we just, you know, you want to pull that out and kind of give it as much as possible. I also think there aren't a lot of runners. There's some things I don't know that people know. We threw some Easter eggs in there. Even with the titles, you know, we tried to title everything kind of practically in the space somehow. And it was just, you can't do a show like this and not just have so much fun. So anything we thought of that we wanted to try, if we could in our limited budget and limited time, we really went for it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing about it, too, though. You talk about your limited budget, but each piece never seems to be in a rush to get to a laugh. And I guess that's what you're talking about in terms of storytelling, that there's a setup and letting us get to know characters. And some of the runners, like, you know, the event, which even gives us a chance to see the show ends on a cliffhanger. But each of these pieces is not rushed. And I also want to talk to you a little bit about that, too, just because the editing rhythms for each piece is very different.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, we approached everything like a short film, right? And then we shot everything, we edited everything, and then we put the episodes together. So in that, you're not really thinking about anything outside of the piece you're working on at the moment, which allows you to find the natural rhythm of that piece, right? The natural rhythm that, but even going back to starting on the page, right? Like our prep work as filmmakers, right? Starting there, a lot of it comes out naturally from there, but figuring out how you're going to shoot it, how you're going to approach it, and literally carrying that through the end. I don't know how the rhythms wouldn't feel individual. You know what I mean? If you really kind of go by that guide, I think.
Sure. We'll take a break. We're talking about rhythms and comedy with my guest, director Dime Davis, who directed all six episodes of the first season of A Black Lady Sketch Show. I just love saying that title. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. We're talking runners and why Time Magazine is so scary with the director of all the episodes of A Black Lady Sketch Show. And I guess I was saying that just because that there's an issue of Time Magazine in the opening credits, I think we see again in the Soul Food Restaurant sketch.
Yes, we do see that again. Yeah, we have those little runners throughout.
Whenever you see a black person reading an issue of Time Magazine, it's always struck me as being funny. So you get to do so much different kind of stuff from in that episode we're talking about, from doing a horror movie to doing, you know, a sports show parody with commentators. And also, as people I know would say, giving too much of black culture away in the in the sketch Get the Belt.
That's actually one of my favorites for sure, because it's, well, I mean, I guess we are giving a little bit away there, but it's so nostalgic, I think, too, you know. And I, what I love also about that is, like, I mean, I think that's why we kind of said it in the 80s, right? Like, oh no, we did 90s. But just because it did feel very nostalgic. And I don't know, it added so much texture. It was cool. And I also remember watching American Gladiators and being obsessed with that. And like, that's where we were in the 90s. We were watching American Gladiators in those jumpsuits, like in the 90s. That's what we were doing.
Yeah. And also, again, like The Fog, it's another piece where there are several different sort of composition and lighting styles in the same sketch, to go from that American Gladiator style, overly bright ceiling lights in inside of an arena, to inside of a house, to showing us that they're inside the house in green screen. I mean, there's a, in visual terms, there's a lot going on in that. And I think that's, again, if we contrast the blatantness of the title of the show with what's going on, I mean, I think that's one of the things that you must hear from people about the delight they take from seeing it, that there is texturally so much happening in the show.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I think, you know, we were able to add a lot of scope to it too, which was really cool because it just makes the show really dynamic and really cool. And I, what I also love about just, oh God, sorry, just thinking about Get the Bell, it was so fun. The lighting in that too, you know, I pulled from Crooklyn a little bit too, which, you know, Spike Lee's film Crooklyn, just because of the nostalgia, but also those moments. There's a moment when she's in the kitchen and she's kind of like backlit by it. And it's like this victory, right? Of like finding those batteries that is soon swept away when they don't work, or, you know, that victory is kind of null and void, which is what I often felt as a kid. But it's just those small, subtle things, I think, really, I don't know, they help tell the story, but also really attach you to that character so you can live through her.
Yeah, I was thinking of Crooklyn, also a little bit visually of House Party, too.
Yes, of, totally. Yeah, I love that.
Robin Harris in front of the TV. I mean, just those kinds of things that, as a person of color, for me, it's thrilling to see those kinds of things that sort of trade on what people will call the mainstream and Black culture, but also for most of us who grew up with that kind of stuff, those walls don't need to be broken because they never existed for us. And for you to get a chance to sort of move between so many different worlds in the show in a way that it took me back to Wild Wild West, because that's another place where you got to sort of break rules that people didn't know existed.
Yeah, that's interesting, the breaking rules thing. I don't know, how do I feel about that?
What do you mean? I mean, it's not a conscious thing for you?
Totally. But I don't know that I necessarily see them as rules. I think I see them as, like, guides, so to speak. I think they're supposed to be. You're supposed to bend them a little bit, I think. And I actually don't know if that's, I think that's something I probably have come to as a filmmaker. I don't know that I believe that, you know, a few years ago, you know, but I think with working it and then with practice and with kind of like learning more by myself as a filmmaker and connecting to characters and stuff, I think those breaking the rules, I think it came later for me.
How do you mean learning more about yourself as a filmmaker?
I think that I'm somewhere in everything that I direct. When I say learning who I am as a filmmaker, it's like one of the best compliments I've ever gotten, besides the one you gave me for the intro, obviously, was from someone who said I was such a humanistic director, which was like, I had never kind of heard that in that way before. And I really loved it. And it, I think it is because I am, I don't know. I don't know how else to say it. Like, I approach everything like open. And so kind of like really trying to connect to that story, connect to that character. And I think because of the work I do as a human being on myself, I'm able to do that, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I guess I was thinking about the series Boomerang, because I mentioned Boomerang in the first half. I should say it's the series, the BET series, and also a Black Lady sketch show. And so much of these shows are about the kind of coding, really about code switching, and the expectation that people have when they see Black figures in the frame. And I guess I say breaking the rule is so much of what you do is sort of saying, including sort of classic quotations and black film quotations. So these characters inhabit two worlds, and your awareness of a filmmaker in those worlds is where, as well as to some extent their awareness, all figure into these things.
I don't know. When I think about Boomerang, I don't know. I know these people, right? And I think I find a way to know. I think it's our job to find a way to know all of those characters, right? Without judgment, any character that we approach. And I've been lucky to work on projects that I have felt connected to, especially as a Black person, and especially as kind of a filmmaker who thinks it's important to show those stories, right? And I don't think that Black stories have to feel incredibly niche. I think that they feel universal and specific at the same time. But what I also love is the things you keep calling out are like the things that you know, right? That are so specific to our culture, but then also as kind of a film scholar knowing those things. And I don't know, I think I get to play in those two spaces a little bit.
One of the things that really strikes me, and this is, again, another runner that goes throughout the series, is Invisible Spy, which if you like calibrate it 10 degrees to the left, it could be an incredibly tragic situation. And I'll let you explain the premise of that just so people know what we're talking about.
Right, yeah. So Invisible Spy is about this woman who is a spy, and she's so great because she's just regular, right? And she can slip into spaces unnoticed because she's just a regular looking woman, and she's not, you know, what we're used to when we're watching typical spy movies where everybody is absolutely gorgeous, right? And that's played by Ashley Nicole Black. I actually love that one because I really relate to that as a regular woman. but getting to see your superpower in that is very interesting. And it absolutely could be tragic, right? But I think, I don't know. I think it's so, such a, it's so nuanced. Just the idea alone is so nuanced. And I've never seen anything like that, especially talking about a Black woman ever in life, you know, and not ever really referring to her as a Black woman. She's just a woman who is regular in this space. It's really, really cool.
But no, but there are certainly things that give it away. Like at one point, somebody says janitor lady, so we know. But also to shoot it as if it were a Jerry Bruckheimer movie or Bourne identity mm-hmm. thriller. So it's got all those blues and grays in it too, that sort of are about the sort of the cold glamour, and you bring somebody who's incredibly warm and human into that.
I mean, again, you set the stage for kind of the genre of the piece, right? And then I think if you do that, it's kind of cool, right? And then you bring her in, which is the juxtaposition of that, which she is written to be, but you show that visually and you get more, I think, more humor out of it, right? Because you really feel the difference in her and everyone else, you know?
I mean, no, there are a couple of points where, I mean, again, that when she goes into the store and everybody starts asking for help, I mean, because that's what a regular person would be in a movie that, or in real life, but with just that you're playing with all these expectations and throwing the character into them and having Nicole act. And again, that's about performance, because it's such a great performance in that too, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's really good mm-hmm. in it. And I think that's also a thing that you've got to love too, that these are really accomplished actors. It's not just sketch stuff. It's actually, to me, it feels like it's got an inner life, which I think comes so much from the way the show plays with culture and cultural expectation.
Absolutely. And I do agree. I think the performances were really stellar. We got to do this cool thing where we all got together, me, the cast, and the head writer, Robin, and we kind of did like a round table of everybody kind of switching roles and kind of playing around. And that came from their kind of background, I think, in, you know, the sketch world. But it was really great to see people try on different things. And for me, I got to some great rehearsal out of that. And also I got to, sometimes when you read the material and then you play with it, you put it on its feet a little bit, there are things that pop out that weren't there before. So we really got that time. I mean, we spent like 2 days doing that, and it was so vital for us moving forward, you know?
What was your first conversation with Robin like about the show?
So I had just finished season one of Boomerang, and I was completely wiped out. And I was on.
We should say you did a bunch. You did a bunch of those too, by the way.
Yes, I did do a bunch of those too. And I was just taking a break. You know, I was just taking a little break. And I think I was I went to Joshua Tree or something for the week. And I got a text from my friend Justin Simeon. He was like, "Hey, Robin Thede has a sketch show, and she wants to talk to you about it." I'm like, "I'll deal with this later." Like, okay, all right. And then I think Robin saw another one of my friends, L. Lorraine, and she I got the same kind of text. I'm like, what is this woman? Like, what does she want? Like, I had never in my life considered sketch, right? I was like, I don't think that I'm gonna do it. But I finally talked to Robin. I mean, if anyone has ever met Robin Thede, you know she has like her energy is on a 15 at all times, right? So I'm talking to her on the phone, and honestly, she says four words that I could not deny. And those words were, it's gonna be narrative, grounded, cinematic, and magical. And I was like, there's no way I cannot be a part of this, right? And a part of something. I didn't even know those things could exist in a sketch world at all, especially a sketch world that is like about Black women. I didn't know. And I was like, well, I've gotta be a part of it. So, you know, I pitched on it to Robin and Lauren Ashley Smith. And yeah, I got the job, and the rest is absolutely history.
I guess this is the point we should say that you've broken ground as the first African-American woman director nominated for an Emmy for directing a variety series. And I want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's kind of crazy.
I know. It's only the 21st century, and you earned it. And I hope you do well at the Emmys.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I also, you know, I am so honored by that title. Definitely I feel mixed, right? Because wow, I've made history. That's so incredible. But then also, wow, it's like that's never happened before. That's kind of crazy. But I think that, you know, the acknowledgement is really special. But I also want to make sure we don't focus so much on the fact that I'm the first, that really kind of lets down whoever comes second or third. Or, you know, I think it's about that great honor, because I'm so incredibly honored, but it's also about what do we put into it? What is the work really like? Because I just don't want to take away from the next women in the line, you know, who have something to say in this space. I think it's really important. And it's also important to say, like, listen, the show, Robin's decision to make a show that it is directed by a Black woman, that is the cast is full of Black women, all of the writers were, like most of the crew, like that's never been done before, right? So I think with opportunities to do the work, we get opportunities to kind of reap the rewards of that work, you know? And I think that's important to say.
And I'm glad you said it, and we're out of time. So you should do something else. You should come back and do the show again.
Yes, absolutely. I would absolutely love to. I would love to talk film with you all day.
Oh, my guess was clearly the low threshold for a lot of things is Dime Davis. Thank goodness she's an Emmy nominee for the series, A Black Lady Sketch Show. Recording engineer at KCRW is Desmond Taylor. The show is mixed by Kat Yore and edited by Rebecca Mooney. To better days, everybody. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.